case this morning for argument, which is Sylvester Morfaw versus Merrick Garland. And I gather that both counsel are by video for this one? Yes, okay. All right, so when counsel for the petitioner is ready to proceed, we'll be happy to hear from you.
It pleases the court, counsel. I represent the petitioner, Sylvester Morfaw, who's from Cameroon and fled Cameroon based on persecution and harm to himself. And he is from the Southwest Boyer region, which is an Anglophone region, where currently the country conditions show that villages have been burned, over 50,000 people are in hiding, children have been killed. What is not in dispute in this case and is ubiquitous throughout the record is the fact that Mr. Morfaw was arrested, whether it was for 35 days, which he consistently said in his testimony before the IJ, two different IJs, one did the direct and crossed, another one did the redirect, and who was the one who made the decision, and that he was a member and active with SCNC. The whole case throughout the credible fear, throughout the Customs and Border Patrol interview is all about his activities and his arrest due to his Anglophone status in the Southern Cameroon's National Council, which is not a party, not a political party. It's a movement. In fact, it's outlawed and it's illegal in Cameroon, even though it is a peaceful group that wants secession for the Southwest from which he is and the Northwest provinces. It is also not in dispute here that he was kept in a cell with about 40 other detainees and beaten around 18 times with batons, cables, boots, and other instruments. It is not in dispute that his wife was also had to flee and go into hiding and was threatened and a fire was set on part of their home. So the harm and the persecution here is not in dispute. What is in dispute is whether or not the inconsistencies with the credible fear interview. Customs and Border Patrol interview. The Customs and Border Patrol is the very first interview which they have when they cross the country by an officer. And the reason that the Customs and Border Patrol people do not ask typically asylum questions, but more how they got here and when they left and things like that is because they are not trained to be asylum officers. They are not trained to know what to ask and what not to ask. What is here is that every time he was questioned by the asylum officer, and there's repeated quotes which we've included in our brief that show that he did not understand the kind of English that was spoken. So pidgin is not really a language, it's a dialect, and it's different in different African countries. And the pidgin that he spoke, the Customs and Border Patrol officer, he said, could not understand and had to keep going and asking other people. His responses are typically no and yes. And the officer at Customs and Border Patrol said he said September 15 he was released and he was arrested August 5th. So that would be 40 days as opposed to 35 days, which he's consistently said August 5th and that he was released September 10th. His wife, and the judge makes a lot about this, is his wife, whose testimony is otherwise completely consistent with everything he's said, says that he was released the 9th, which is one day before. And that's because that was the day that the bribe was paid of $50,000 and that was accepted so that he could be released, which he wasn't actually released till the next day.
Well, can I just to you bring up that point? I mean, the issue with your client's credibility at the hearing, though, was that it was the switch from, I can't remember if it was from 2 a.m. to 2 p.m. or vice versa, right? But he's confronted with the fact that if it's the, I wish I could remember which was which, but, you know, basically he's forced to say, I made a mistake because the timing just is not lining up with the rest of his story. And so it seemed to me totally apart from the interview with the Customs and Border Patrol person, that might be one area where the IJ could rightly say, you're switching your story because you were confronted with a fact that doesn't quite line up. Maybe that's reason for me to doubt you. And then just sorry to make this compound, but then just with the losing of the passport, there was again at the hearing itself, put aside whatever he said to the Customs and Border Patrol person, you know, he kind of had a story that was all over the map. So those are the two potential inconsistencies that I saw at the hearing itself that gave me pause, and I'd love to hear whatever you have to say about both.
So Judge Watford, I would say that on the passport issue with Customs and Border Patrol, he was asked specifically two questions, it appears. One was, where is his passport now? He responded, I was attacked in the jungle. And the second question is, where is your passport now? And he said, I lost it in the bush. That was all. Then later with the judge, he said, well, actually what happened was,
well,
I lost
it. Can I stop you there? Because this is, I'll tell you what gave me pause. He's asked, what happened to your passport? He says, I lost it at a hotel. Okay, that's his first out of the box answer. And then he's not even asked, he's not even confronted yet with his prior inconsistent statement. I think the government lawyer said, well, do you remember talking to the Customs and Border Patrol? And that's when he says, oh, well, actually, you know, there was this thing in the jungle and my passport flew away. And that's when things got a little bit convoluted to my read. So that's what I was hoping you could respond to.
Yes, so he does say, he does explain, and that could be an addition. So he's not saying that, no, he didn't lose the passport in the jungle. He's saying he lost it. Someone that was a large group of people found it, brought it to the hotel. He brought it to him. He had it in the hotel. Then he moved hotel, but then he tried to get it back, and he lost his bag, and he couldn't get it. And he was a little convoluted about that. The question is whether the two couldn't have happened. Or does the fact that one happened mean that the other didn't happen? And again, he is speaking in pidgin before the judge and before the asylum officer. He was not given those safeguards, not even given basic safeguards at all. Wasn't reread the statements or any of that stuff at the Customs and Border Patrol.
I'm willing to grant you that maybe that we can't view the Customs and Border Patrol interview as a reliable indicator of what he said. So I'm granting you that. What I'm talking about is what happened at the hearing. And I don't think you can say that he was somehow deprived of an adequate interpreter there. He had an interpreter in his native language or the language he's most comfortable in. And that's when he gives, at least in the IJ's view, two potentially inconsistent accounts of what happened to his passport. Now, I grant you that, yes, both of those things could have happened, but the sequence in which he presents them at the hearing, you know, it's a little bit odd. I don't know if you would grant that, but that's how I read it.
I would agree that it is a little odd. It's not something I haven't heard before that, you know, they've been traveling for a month. This interview before the judge, I think, was a year or 2 years after the hearing. Maybe he doesn't recollect. Maybe he was traumatized. I agree that he was a bit confused when he talked before the judge. He did say it all before the government even confronted him with what the Customs and Border Patrol person said. He did say it flew away, and maybe the translation wasn't correct, but he says it goes, and then someone brought it to him, and that did create a lot of confusion for the judge. I agree, and the judge relied heavily on that. And then the other thing that that you asked me about, Your Honor, that you had a concern about was the 2 p.m. or the 2 a.m. Well, I'm not sure in Cameroon a person with a ninth grade whose language is technically the language is English, but pidgin is the dialect. It really makes a huge difference. But there he said, I made a mistake. He said repeatedly, I made a mistake.
The difference between being released in the middle of the day versus the middle of the night. It just seems like a hard. How would you not remember which of those two it was, right? I could see if it was like 2 p.m. versus 4 p.m. Yeah, sure, that's easy. But 2 a.m. versus 2 p.m., there's a big difference there, and especially if it's an event as significant as the one that he's describing, where he's about to be sent to some prison where, you know, a lot of people they're never seen again, and he's able to bribe his way out, and he's released, so it's, you know, like your life has been saved, and you don't remember whether it was the middle of the night versus the middle of the afternoon?
I would suggest that he wasn't sure exactly when he was released, because he may not have been well. He may not have really realized when he was released, because immediately he was taken to his aunt's, and he had been there for over a month at that point and had been beaten numerous times. So maybe that wasn't really clearly his focus of, you know, what time of day was it, or when was it, or, you know, for you and I, certainly we would know if we were released by, who knows if he had a watch, if he even knew what the time was. So that may not have been something that was on his radar that he may have even thought about.
Okay, well, I consumed almost your entire argument. Do you have other points you want to make before we hear from the government?
No, Your Honor, I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Okay, very good. Let's hear from counsel for the Attorney General.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Ashley Arthur on behalf of the Attorney General of the United States. Substantial evidence supports the agency's determination that petitioner lacks credibility and failed to meet his burden to establish CAT eligibility. I have here a long list of petitioner's testimonial inconsistencies, and I could go on for quite some time. As for his alleged detention by Cameroonian police, he is released
hang on. Are you going to rely on the Customs and Border Patrol interview as giving rise to inconsistencies? Because if you are, I kind of have a problem just with that from the get-go. So can you tell me, are you going to set that aside, or are you relying heavily, as the IJ did, on that initial interview?
I am not relying on the CBP interview. I can list many inconsistencies that do not rely on the CBP interview.
Okay.
So, for example, his wife's affidavit states it's the 9th that he was released, and he testified it to being the 10th. As for
So what difference does that make? And particularly since at least one of the versions is 2 a.m., as I understood it, she's aware of paying the bribe, and then he gets released a short time later, and if it was at 2 a.m., that's... seems to be entirely consistent, not inconsistent. So you know, we've said date discrepancies, okay, does it matter or not? And I don't understand what the difference would be between the 9th and the 10th, particularly if the second day is 2 a.m.
Your Honor, the time goes to a very significant detail of his alleged harm, and the difference between night and day is pretty huge.
Stop. What you said and what I asked you about was the alleged discrepancy between the wife's testimony about the 9th and his testimony about the 10th. We'll get to the time of day, but it seems to me that's a discrepancy that strikes me as utterly immaterial unless you can tell me why it makes a difference.
Yes, Your Honor. It matters because in the totality, everything considered, all these inconsistencies together, which the agency was required to consider, the totality in isolation.
Well, so your response to me says, let's look at the other things. So let's look at the other things. That by itself doesn't seem to stand for very much. Okay. So what next should we look at?
Next, we should look at his testimony as to time. So there's discrepancies between the date. There's discrepancies of the time. He first testified it was 2 a.m.
Well, we just talked about dates, so don't talk to me about date unless you really have something more to say about that. Now we're on time of day. And I do understand the difference between 2 a.m. and 2 p.m., but I look at his testimony, and at one point, the same place where he talks about I was mistaken, he then refers to afternoon and then not afternoon and 2 p.m. Do we know what his understanding of afternoon is?
Well, he was presented a pidgin English. He was provided a pidgin English interpreter for this hearing, and he didn't bring up the 2 p.m. time until DHS confronted him with his declaration, states he was released this time that evening. And then all of a sudden, he says it was 2 in the afternoon, 2 p.m.
Well, this is just after he had answered the question. So around 2 a.m., you went to DOLA on September 10th. His answer is yes.
Yes, and then at page 184 in the record, Your Honor, this is when he's confronted with this declaration, and he says, oh, it was 2 p.m., and the declaration is apparently incorrect, even though it's signed by him. And I'd like to know also the declaration was written by him, apparently without the assistance of an interpreter and standard English, and he swore to its truth. And so we have three potential different times here, and they were never pinned down or clarified. And then as for his passport, he lost it twice for three different reasons. He also testified inconsistently as to the nature of his political activities. And this is a finding that the board actually deemed waived below. So this aspect of the adverse credibility finding is unexhausted. Further, what petitioner calls errors on part of the CBP agent or asylum officer, the agency reasonably concluded were inconsistencies on part of petitioner. Petitioner states in their opening brief that the CBP interview must be unreliable because it states that he applied for a visa lottery, but this is inaccurate somehow. However, his visa application at page 331 through 337 of the record, he submitted this visa application, and there he does state he applied for a visa lottery. Also, there's all these phone numbers and dates of birth of various relatives that are reflected consistently throughout the asylum application and his CBP interview and the asylum interview and his testimony, and he doesn't contest any of these tedious details. Wrong.
You told us you weren't going to rely upon the interview by the Customs and Border Patrol. Is that what you're talking about now?
Okay. I'm also talking about his asylum applications and his interview with the asylum officer and his opening brief, where he has inconsistencies even his opening brief stating that he didn't apply for a visa lottery or somehow that's wrong. His visa application does show that he did.
Apologize, but for us, you're freezing sometimes, so we're not hearing parts of what you said, and I just missed what you just said. So if you could hit that again, please.
Yes. So I was referring to the information that's consistent and detailed in the asylum application, his visa application, and his asylum officer credible fear interview. The small tedious information such as dates of birth of relatives and telephone numbers, contact information, he doesn't contest any of that's wrong. He just contests things that are inconvenient to his claim. And for example, in his opening brief, he argues that the SCNC is not political in nature. And yet on his visa application, he states that he's not a part of any social, professional, or charitable group. And this visa application predates any of the alleged harm. And even disregarding the visa application, there's also support that he has some confidence in the English language because he testified to his travels to the U.S. where he, I quote, met a white woman who spoke English, who explain to him how to travel to his next destination. And then he reiterated that this English-speaking woman told him how to catch a taxi to a bus station. And it's not required that... So he was provided in his asylum interview and in his merits hearings, counsel and pidgin English interpreter, plus his declaration apparently was written without the assistance of an interpreter in standard English. So the government believes is substantial evidence that supports the adverse credibility finding. Because he's was found not credible, by the way, petitioner does state that that his claims are not dispute, that he was detained, that he's a member of SCNC, but because he was found not credible, those things are in dispute. We don't know if we can take these statements as true. His letter evidence and his witness did not attest to his membership to SCNC. They did not attest to his activities within this group he claims to be a member of. And then the agency gave wide latitude, that Congress gave, rather, wide latitude to the agency to assess. And moving on to cat protection in my final minute, you know, aside independent of his discredited testimony, he did not establish his burden that he has a particular risk. And even in cases where credibility is not at issue, being credible is not enough to automatically fail. And here, the agency reasonably concluded that he did not establish his eligibility. And if there are no further questions, I will briefly conclude. This court should deny the petition of review because the record does not compel the conclusion that petitioner testified credibly or met his high burden of establishing eligibility for cat protection. Thank you for inviting me here today.
Okay, thank you very much for your argument. If we could put 2 minutes on the clock for rebuttal. All right, please proceed. Yeah, you go ahead.
The court is frozen for some reason.
Yes, we're having...
Okay. All right. Sorry. So, Your Honor, I'm glad to hear that the government has said that they're not going to rely on the CB inconsistencies. That's the majority of the case, basically. As for SCNC, I would disagree with what counsel said, because throughout his CBP, his asylum, his court, he repeatedly says that he was arrested because of being, they ask him, who tortured you and why? On AR-303, he says, the military, because they accused me of being an SCNC member. So he repeatedly talks about SCNC and about being, part of that group. The misunderstanding occurs to, you know, does he really understand that that's a political group, or is his activities that are political? He did present a card. An SCNC card from 2014. The only reason the judge did not include that card is because his name, Sylvester, it was a typo and the L was missing. So the judge did the card. I mean, it's in the AR record, but he did not consider it, which seems to me incredulous that it would just be dismissed. He also had other witnesses who testified again, because that was submitted late. That was not considered. The fact that he had mistakes on dates of birth, that actually lends to his credibility, because it shows that even that was not important to him, dates of, you know, when people are born. And in Cameroon, dates are not what they are to Americans. And in asylum, dates is very important. So, you know, with as low education as he had as a construction worker in primary education, maybe he doesn't remember the dates of births of his brothers and sisters. His brother testified by video. He did have an attorney when he wrote his declaration. And I would thank the court and ask the court to strike the CBP record from being considered and remand the case to the Board of Immigration Appeals. For consideration on the asylum.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case just argued is submitted, and we are adjourned for the day.